Hi, I'm Greg Schaefer, and welcome to the Virtual CISO Moment. Robert Hill joins us today. He is CEO of Cyturus Technologies. Robert, thank you so much for joining us today.
Pleasure, Greg. Thanks for having me.
We'd love to hear about your path from how and why you got started in this wonderful cyber field and what led you to the point. I guess you've been CEO over at Cyturus for the last 5 years almost, fifth year anniversary coming up soon. So we'd love to hear your entire journey.
Oh, Greg, interesting question. Unlike a lot of folks in this industry, I didn't just start in cybersecurity. And we go back into the 80s, I developed custom software. And back then we were, you know, businesses were paper-based. They were used to running and pushing files. And back then it was interesting to see how we could virtualize, if you will, their business. The forms, the paperwork, the communication, the networking. We were dealing with Windows 3.1.1, Novell. You'd log in as supervisor instead of administrator back then. And I started helping companies understand the impact that technology could have on their business. Mm. And you fast forward up into the 2000s, I was working with Dell in their in what was Ross Bros EDS side. And we were doing transitions of data centers for organizations. We were consolidating massive data centers, and I was running these massive projects of moving, you know, petabytes of data across thousands of machines. And I begin to really see the impact technology has on the business and the business process. This time, instead of improving the business, I saw the opposite side of how it was impacting negatively the business. And so we've had this shift in technology being a driving motivator and then becoming a deterrent from that moving at the speed of business. So as I begin to get into the cyber and understanding what those outside relationships were, it was natural for me to become a CISSP and start helping companies look at how do we make compliance and true risk management a differentiator, a positive differentiator, and help those companies understand how to take technology to improve the business instead of detracting from the speed of business. Mm-hmm. And so it was a journey of over 30 years of starting that journey from helping companies define how technology can use them and how they can leverage technology, and then moving to how do we begin to use risk management and the potential delivery impact to the delivery of their business services, and understand that technology is neither good nor bad. It's right. How we implement it within the business, and we need to start looking at it from the risk perspective of the delivery of business services.
Well, I often say that, I started out in almost the paper days. It's like, you know, we still had punch cards for registration in college when I was a student assistant. And, the days I tell folks, it's like, yeah, that was the days before Twisted Pair Ethernet. And they're like, there were search days? And I'm like, yes, there were.
We had BNC cables that you plugged in and twisted.
yes, and little T connectors and all that. And you had to have
that token ring, and it had to be continued. You had a break. Your network was down.
Yeah, the thin net had to have that 50 ohm resistor at the end. And, and by the way, as far as token ring goes, I still have a token ring connector at home. I have a little museum, but I am getting way off topic here. The point I was trying to make is that you had a kind of like a shift as well, too. With regards to how you saw like the whole technology security field. For me, it was like, I can describe it a little more simple. Like the first half of my career, or the first part of my career, was all about networking, getting things to talk to each other. And then I realized I was starting to spend more time getting things not to talk to each other. And that was my jump into security, and then the CSSP and CISSP and all that. So you spent some time as a systems engineer, and which eventually led you to where you're at today?
That's the short and the long of it, sir.
So are you the founder of Cyturus? Or
I am. Okay. I'm the founder of Cyturus. We founded almost 6 years ago, 5 years ago. And it really came out of what you're talking about. What's the frustration in the industries? And people ask, why did we start Cyturus? Why do we have a platform? Why do we have a continuous compliance or risk management platform when there's so many options in the market? And I can answer that in two words: sheer frustration. and that's literally what it was. There was a lot of tools, but none of them came from the perspective of a practitioner. None of them came. And there is a difference when you're dealing with a client. You know, all of us have been in spreadsheet hell. You know, we've run different spreadsheets for every different compliance. We've run spreadsheets for every different iteration.
Still do in some instances, yeah.
And unfortunately, people still are. And so within my own consulting company, we could not scale. When you're doing things manually, there's a finite amount of time that has to be spent pushing that paper. And we could not scale our client load. And you would come in behind the big boys like a Deloitte or a PwC, and you would get this 500-page document, and then you have to go through that document to try to figure out exactly what they can accomplish before the next assessment comes down the pipe. And it became very frustrating for us. And so we developed an internal tool that eliminated spreadsheets. It reduced our reporting time from weeks to hours. In fact, there was a press release 2 weeks ago where one of our clients, who's with C3PO in the Department of Defense CMMC ecosystem, where they took their time from 3 weeks to reporting to 3 days simply by using our platform. And that was the genesis, Greg, is for us to be able to manage all of the manual work effort. And more than that, today, data is the new gold. And so we can take that data and we can turn that around and provide it back to the client. Where a CISO asks, what is our improvement month over month, quarter over quarter, year over year? What is our reduction in business risk? What is our improvement of compliance? How do we meet a new compliance regime that's coming along? And utilizing a singular platform, we can provide those answers based in the data.
Well, I like something that you said, and it gets back to sort of related to one of like my constant little tidbits of advice. I like to think that I have a two or three pieces of advice that people listen to. And one is that, you know, you talked about the frustration of tools that really weren't built for the practitioner. And that made me think of you want to manage the tool. You don't want the tool to manage you. There's so many tools that are basically, they end up telling you how to manage your security program, your risk management program. And it's like, no, I don't want that. I know how I want to manage it. I need a tool to support. So I definitely want to dive into that in just a little bit, but, and this may lead to that, but from both the practitioner perspective and the service provider, solution provider, I should say, perspective, what would you say right now is one of the more significant threats to small and mid-sized businesses with regards to cybersecurity?
I'm going to answer this differently than you think. And okay. I'm not going to talk about outside threats. I'm going to talk about internal threats. And the reason why I see that, and I'm not talking an insider threat. I'm talking about this concept where senior leadership or the board can not take a necessary action, whether it be buying a tool, performing an assessment, doing remediation, budgeting necessary for resources required to meet specific deficiencies. And when they don't take that step and there's no immediate negative action, there's no immediate consequence to their business, it emboldens them to kick that can down the road again.
Absolutely.
And that road, that bullet, you know, they keep kicking that. Now we are a year and a half, 2 years into legacy debt. And the adversaries have continued. And this is a zero sum game. And they've continued to build up. And eventually it will catch up. And that organization does have to catch up from that legacy of those poor decisions. So I think within the small businesses, one of the most impactful threats right now is the misconception that it's not important. They can wait till next quarter. They can wait till they have budget. They don't have to do this because they're small and it's not going to impact them because historically they've been safe and not attacked. But that doesn't equate into the reality of where they are and that legacy cyber debt that they have, you know, self-imposed upon themselves by not taking those actions.
Well, you talk about them not taking the necessary actions. And sometimes I think that occurs because they don't understand the risks. And from a practitioner perspective, I'm kind of stuck on that right now because we started off talking about practitioners. It's and particularly from the CISO perspective, that's one of the most important, sometimes I would say the most important role of a CISO. It's to, however you want to word it, it is to transfer, communicate, what have you, sufficient and complete information to the C-suite, the executive management, and the board of directors so that they can then make risk-informed decisions. Absolutely. And you're right. It's at least in larger organizations, you have the role of a CISO to do that. And the smaller ones, I'm kind of self-promoting a little bit here. That's what the virtual CISO role is supposed to be, to do the exact same thing.
Of course.
But what are some, and feel free to introduce how Cyteris can help with this, but what are some of the, how do you break through that to make sure that A, they know, and B, they care, or maybe it should be A, they care, and then B, they know about the risks that are out there. I would think, first of all, that one of the things would be that, at least from my perspective, they need reports that are easily consumable, that they can understand. Yes. And so a lot of times you throw stuff out there, like you were just talking about, like, a big consulting company that gives you, I think that they're paid by number of words. Number
I think pages. They are. They have to be. Or number of slides in a presentation.
Or exactly. And it's almost all the same, all these different graphs and everything. But you get to the third page or the third slide or the 10th page, you're almost glassy-eyed. And you've ruined the opportunity to get that information in there.
That's right.
How can that change?
You know, the first thing that you were talking about is the education. You know, mm-hmm. even the SEC is now saying that you have to have people on the board that understand cybersecurity. But yeah. Greg, you're absolutely correct. You can't use acronyms. You can't start throwing around. And we've always used FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And that doesn't work in today's world.
You just use an acronym to say that you can't use
acronyms. I am an acronym hell here, my friend. And the folks in my peers in business, they're like, Robert, you've got to start explaining these acronyms because we do a lot of work with DOD, and I can use and run an entire sentence of nothing but acronyms, and
absolutely.
You want to see somebody's eyes glaze over. But you're absolutely correct. But we have used this fear, uncertainty, and doubt in promoting the necessity of cybersecurity. We have to change. You know, I don't know if people have just become desensitized to that, or it's so much in the news now, it's just expected. It's no longer an if, it's a when.
Or, hey, we've got cyber insurance that'll take care of it if we get dinged. Or we've got an MSSP or an MSP. They're handling all of our systems and security. So we don't have to worry about that, right?
I hear that all the time, Greg. And it is a frustrating conversation because you have to make it real to them. And what's really happened is now that you see senior leadership executives, CISOs, and C-levels that are being held personally accountable, they're being indicted by the DOJ for false representations. And so now it's becoming real. It's becoming personal to those senior leadership. It's not just a role that they're filling. It becomes something that they personally are held accountable to. So that was the first step. We needed to make the personal accountability so they can't just shrug and say, I got cyber for that. You know, I've actually sat across the table from an executive years ago, and that's exactly what they said. I don't have to worry about that. I have cyber to cover that. And the concept there just blows my mind that somebody can come to that conclusion. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, what can we do? And I think you nailed it. What we have traditionally, legacy, we've had those big once a year assessments. And so here's your big document. Here's your 126 slides that you're paid per slide by the big boys to put together. And now you've got 11 months to go through this and make your improvements. Well, Greg, that's the problem. You've got senior leadership that are making decisions based on stale data in the review mirror 10, 11 months ago. Mm-hmm. We have got to get off that roller coaster of annual assessments and move into continuous compliance and risk management, where the decisions are being made using real-time data. And that data can't be this massive, well, we stopped this many and we have this many attacks and we've got this firewall rules. That's not today's language of the boardroom. It is, these are the potential risks to the delivery of our business services. Now we have to quantify that in actual dollar amounts. If we don't produce this widget, if we don't deliver this service, this is the financial impact. Okay, now we know there's a financial impact. I was working with a large hospitality company years ago, and they knew that their online reservation system, if it went offline, it was $1 million per 15 minutes of lost revenue. Now we can take that number and set a budget for what the business is willing to spend to reduce that potential impact of being down for 15 minutes. And now you can quantify the spend to senior leadership based on the risk and the potential quantified financial risk of delivery of that business service or non-delivery of that online reservation system.
So how then do you guys incorporate, well, first of all, how do you calculate your quantification, and how do you, I mean, I'm not asking for any intellectual property here. I'm just talking basic. You know, what are some of the inputs that you need to have to do that? And how do you handle the continuous risk management side of it?
Several very good questions. And so I'll start with the beginning. How do we do it right now? The first thing is to get an organization to understand they have a problem. And that's the educational piece. To recognize that there's blind spots. To recognize that they have to have, as you said, make decisions from a place of knowledge. And if they don't have that knowledge, they're making decisions in a vacuum. So that's the first thing. The second is to be able to have enough data points. If you take a framework, and I can go down from anything from CSF to, you know, you pick the framework or risk management, risk framework that you want to use, there's not enough data points. Because from an auditor standpoint, is it a yes or a no? Have you checked that box? If you check the box, you move on to the next one. That is zero value, Greg. Zero value to the person taking it, zero value to the person providing that. You have to be able to give a first data point of the implementation status of that. So in some cases, it's going to be not implemented. It's a gap. It's simply not done. In other cases, it's going to be partially implemented. It's going to be reactionary. It's going to be good people doing good things when bad things happen, but there's no standard operating guidance around it.
So this is sort of the importance of maturity levels is where you're getting at here.
Absolutely. You have to have that. And so now you can know where they are at this baseline. And then see that continuous improvement. So a CISO can now see this is where we were, month over month improvement, quarter over quarter, year over year, and they can see that. Now tie that to business risk. So now you've got these tied back to a performance of a particular compliance control or practice or process or procedure. And now you tie that to a risk to the delivery of a business service. And if that business service has a financial impact to a business unit, say, whether it be, you know, production, and they're making a widget, well, now we know if the, let's go to AutoCAD or to their CAD system, if they have ransomware and they've locked it up, they can't give that design to their CNC to cut that widget. So now they're offline. They're no longer producing that widget. So we can back up and say, okay, what are our risks to the development of this widget? Well, they're going to say, well, power for the CNC, supply chain for our product, you know, the raw materials, you can go down the list, but we also have to look at the technology side. What about that machine that does that design? Is it, you know, we look at CIA, is there a confidentiality of that data? Is there the availability? Ransomware knocks us out of that. But what about the integrity? Did somebody go in and change that from a 31 millimeter to a 27 millimeter? Human eye doesn't pick that up, but now we have failures in national defense in the F-35 because that gasket did not meet the criteria by which they manufactured because an adversary changed that through a malicious attack into a CAD software on someone's desktop in a five-person operation. So those are the risks that we have to start looking at in managing from the perspective of what possibly could impact our delivery of a quality product.
So you talked about risk quantification, which is a, I wouldn't say it's a hobby of mine, but it's certainly something that I'm really interested in. I have practiced the FAIR methodology before as far as quantifying risk. I understand that you guys don't go down that route for a couple of reasons. Do you want to discuss that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, Rick. And there's a lot of thought. This is an exercise in philosophy. So it's no right or wrong answer. But, you know, when I was studying this back in at the university years ago, we looked at Monte Carlo modeling. And I love stats. I love playing with statistics. And
for those who don't know, Monte Carlo is what's really the engine behind the FAIR methodology.
It's the engine behind many types of, you know, actuarials, if you will. Mm-hmm. And let's talk about the actuarial world and how Monte Carlo really functions well. If I have an insurance policy for flood coverage, I know there are only a finite number of threats of a flood. I need to be on top of a hill. I need to not be in a floodplain. I need to not have a creek that has risen in the last 100 years. And I can go down and list, and then I can quantify the risk of a flood occurring to that property, that residency, that business, because there's a finite number of potential attack vectors for that. In cybersecurity, there's too many attack vectors, and there's new ones coming up every day. There's no possible way for us to model all of the potential threat vectors. And while you can use math to determine, well, you know, we got 60% of possible threat vectors, and for this 40%, we're going to do this. Well, Greg, you know as well as I do, we can make stats say anything we want it to say if you plug the right into the right place.
Right. And I often tell people that the FAIR methodology, it's not completely fair, but I don't want to go down that pun. there is still an awful, awful lot of subjectiveness in there.
Tremendous
amount. You can get to partially, but mm-hmm. but yeah, that's a big problem. So go ahead, continue on.
So I looked at this back in 2015, and I was working with companies. This was before I founded Securus, and companies were saying the exact same thing back. How do we quantify this? Mm-hmm. And I scratched my head. I was going, I'm not sure, and I don't like that as an answer. So I went back and did a mathematical model, and what we recognize is the more inputs, the closer that becomes. And let me give you an example. If in a risk framework, you have an objective of establishing a risk management strategy for an organization, and we can say that there are only four possible answers for each of those. You can be not implemented. It means it's a gap. You can be partially implemented. Good people doing good things when bad things happen without standard operating guidance. Largely implemented, that is, you've got a standard operating guidance. This is what you say you do. But to be fully implemented, you must be able to prove that's what you do. Not just say it, but you can attest to it. Absolutely. That's only a single data point. You can't quantify off that. But if you take those questions and you put them in maturity indicator levels, and now each of those questions is an advancement of that practice at the next level. Let me give you an example. So in a risk management domain with an objective of establishing a risk management strategy, I would ask a maturity indicator level or MIL level one question. And that would be, so great. Have you identified the possible cybersecurity risk to your business? Oh yeah, largely. Yeah, we've largely identified those. That's
yeah, we're cool. One. We're secure. Don't worry about it.
There you go. A MIL two question, great. Have you documented those? Ooh, partially. We got a sprint.
Hang on a second. I'm writing it down. We're secure. Yeah, we're good.
Exactly. And so, you know, now the second question is partially. We're partially right there. We're listing it. We look at it a few times a year. A right MIL three question, Greg. Have you prioritized those risks by the potential impact to the delivery of your business service? Oh, not implemented at all. We're nowhere near prioritizing our risk. Where do you think we are? Now I can take those data points and using a patented algorithm that we created, it gives it a score, say a 1.2 out of 5 with a 2 decimal place. And why? Well, you've identified, you've partially documented, but you're not doing anything with that. So it's giving you no value. So by asking a series of 20 or 30 questions in that risk management, you and how they're answered and how that maturity scales, you now can give a very precise, this is where you are in this specific framework for this specific set of controls, establishing a risk management strategy. And then you can turn that into a roadmap. Well, we know that you need a centralized risk register. You need a topology, a classification, an organizationally defined timeline by which you meet, and a committee that's going to start managing these risks. I now created a roadmap of what you need to do to improve the maturity of establishing a risk management strategy within an organization. I've given you a score, I've given you a roadmap, and told you what you need to do to improve that. Now we can show the senior leadership, this is where you were at a 1.2. 2 months later, you're now at a 2.3. 6 months later, you're now at a 3.2. And now a year later, you're at a 4.8, and you are in good shape. And this is the work effort necessary to reduce that risk. Greg, did that help you understand the direction of quantification?
Absolutely, because the more that you can see the maturity and the implementation, that's going to have an effect on your, if you excuse me using a fair term again, the cost exposure, basically.
Oh, absolutely.
You can figure out the cost easily as far as like, if I can't sell 100 widgets in one day, I'm going to lose this much revenue. That's easy. You know, 100 times whatever the widget costs. So absolutely. I'm not saying, I mean, there are some other more complicated things, but the business folks understand that. They just, right. They're just kind of like shooting, you know, spitballs into the wind as far as like, well, I don't think this is going to happen. Well, what do you think that the risk is? Well, I think that, you know, we talk about it in qualitative risk. Is it low, medium, or high? Well, I think that the chance, the likelihood of this just happening is low. Well, why do you say that? Well, my gut tells me that.
Yeah.
So, and gut never works when you're talking about successful information security risk management. This is a very stressful field. And I'm sure that being CEO of a company that does all this as well, founder, has got to be very stressful as well. And one of the risks, if you'll pardon me saying that, that we as practitioners, everybody in the industry has, is not just practitioners. There's a problem of burnout. There's a mental health problem. Huge. And part of it is fed by the job market today. Part of it is just that I think the folks that are attracted to cyber and information security in general, they're problem solvers. They want to solve problems. And you're trying to solve a problem where there is no ultimate 100% solution. So people got to get away from the stress. And
it's a zero-sum infinite game, Greg, is what you're talking about.
That's exactly right. You said it more eloquently than I could. But you got to get away from the stress every now and then and do something else. What's one of the things you do to decompress from the stresses of cyber?
Yeah, it's interesting, Greg, that you asked that question because most people don't know this about me. I actually build custom cars. You know, I de-stress by going into my garage and getting grease under my fingernails. You know, I buy cars at auctions, usually wrecked. Mm-hmm. Tend to go to sports cars that are wrecked, and I'll put them up on, you know, jack stands in my garage or a lift. And, you know, when I can't sleep or when I need to de-stress or when it's, you know, a stress, I may go between calls just when I get stressed out and go spin a wrench, you know, go disassemble something, take something apart. Because everything you and I do in this industry is all mental. Mm-hmm. We don't see the physical results of what we do if we do our job well. Because if we've done it well, there's not going to be an impact. We're not going to be working an incident. And so by doing something physically, whether it's building cabinetry, I've got employees of mine that are furniture workers. You know, I try to make sure that each of us has some sort of outlet. One of my guys comes over to my garage and we sit and turn wrenches on one of our vehicles. You know, there's things that we can do to physically get an activity and see something that we create, where in cyber, we don't always get that satisfaction.
You know, and that's a really good piece way to look at it. I know one of the more common, you hear this piece of advice that one of the things that you should do every day, first thing when you wake up, is make your bed. And you make your bed because you can see. You see the physical result of doing something and succeeding at something that day. So I like the idea. I don't think I've ever heard someone say it quite like that. I like the idea of, and I've asked this 131 times, of seeing the results. Because you're right. In cyber, when we hear nothing, those are good results. Exactly. And that's it. No pat on the back or anything. Nothing. Usually it's just like, hey, we didn't have any attacks today. Greg, you're doing a bang up job, you know? And then when there are attacks, it's like, well, what went wrong? And that's where the stress comes in. Mm-hmm. Well, what are your future plans, either with you or the company or both?
You know, Greg, it's interesting you asked that. We are the designated platform for the DoD CMMC rollout. I know there, I went with acronyms again. The Department of Defense has this Cybersecurity Maturity Model certification. Mm-hmm. And using the CyberAB, we were selected as the default platform for that ecosystem. So we're working with OSCs, we work with RPOs, we work with the C3 PAOs regularly. The next thing for us is to replicate that in healthcare. I had some executives at an offsite we were talking about from several companies. We were looking at the industry and where the most impacts are to specifically America and to our citizens. And it's in our healthcare. You know, yeah, we can talk about infrastructure. We can talk about a lot of different things, but everybody has some sort of impact with healthcare. And one of the other CEOs I was talking to, his 78-year-old mother, asked about cybersecurity of her prescriptions. And it got him thinking, even our senior parents and grandparents are having impact from healthcare. So we're working right now to launch a platform within the healthcare industry that is going to be a certification in a cybersecurity quantification model so that organizations can begin to understand what their risks are, what their, you know, impacts to that delivery business service, because we see hospitals shutting down and transferring patients over a simple ransomware quit. You and I can talk about ransomware being simple, but it's not simple to them. And so the next step for us is trying to do in the healthcare space what we are already accomplishing and doing in the DoD and specifically in the defense industrial base.
Awesome stuff. Look forward to following on how that goes. What's the website for Cyturus?
Cyturus.com.
That's an easy one to remember. I was gonna guess it, but I'm like, well, you know, back in the day, because I think that we have similar days back, if you will. You remember there were only 7 top level domains, and they were easy to remember. And now there's like 14.3 million.
Yeah. It's so crazy, it's like, what they are, but everybody still wants to go to the .com. And it's interesting absolutely. That you asked that question, because the word Cyturus, prior to us, you'd never heard it before because it didn't exist. So when I was looking at a name to name the company, I was going through a lot of different things. And the number one thing, Greg, was to be able to, what domains are available? How can we brand something? And pharmaceutical companies do it all the time. They invent words and then it becomes into our vocabulary. So if I look at the Latin word for maturity, that word is maturus. So you cut the MA off of maturus, and you add CY for cyber, Cyturus is quite literally cyber maturity.
See, I love it when companies have a name, which is a different word, but there's like meaning behind the name. There are some that just like pick something that sounds good, or they put an I on it or an A at it or something like that. But anyway, Robert, we are out of time. This has been a great conversation. Could have talked for another hour and a half. Unfortunately, we can't do that, but I do appreciate you joining us today.
Greg, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. Appreciate the invite. I've enjoyed the conversation.
Me too. And everybody, stay secure.